Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 966. This episode brought to you by Spotify. Some things were meant for each other. Fries and milkshakes, barbecue sauce and everything. And now ID10T and Spotify, the same app that has millions of songs, now has thousands of podcasts like this one. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite shows and discover new ones. To subscribe to ours, just search for ID10T, tap follow, get every new episode delivered to you right on Spotify. Podcasts on Spotify streaming right now. And now, and also now, and then the nows of tomorrow as well, when they become nows, which is going to be quicker than you feel like it's going to be. I also, just in a shameless bit of self-promotion, I have some shows coming up. I'm going to be at the DC Improv in November, and I'm also going to be adding a second show. We added a second show to the October 26th show at the Neptune in Seattle. There's a 9:30 show, and people have actually already bought a bunch of tickets, so get them, because I want everyone to come in costume, and then we could do like a costume contest in the first show, and then the winner of that contest, if they wanted to come back, you know, for the second show,
Yeah. Then
the winner from that show, and then we could like...
Another contest,
and then
like anyone beat that person.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's really fair though, because then the first audience is going to vote on both of them. You know what I mean? But I still think it could. But maybe it might still work.
Invite them back to hang out.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, tickets are on Ticketmaster for that. And then for the DC Improv, just search for the DC Improv, and then I'll also be at the Kaboo Festival. Friday, September 14th, and that is in Del Mar in San Diego, K-A-B-O-O. And then we're going to announce the ID10T lineup in a couple weeks.
Awesome.
What else you got, Katie Levine?
Kurt Frazier writes, my friend Andy Coffey doesn't know I'm doing this, but I would like to tell everyone about his amazing project called Sacred Wind. It is a project that spans three books and also an album of music from the main characters in the books. It's about a Welsh Viking flatulence rock band from an alternative reality.
Fantastic.
Think of Monty Python meets Terry Pratchett meets Spinal Tap. More info can be found at sacredwind.co.uk or at sacredwindband on Twitter.
I think you've definitely hovered directly over the Venn diagram of what you just described in our audience is a perfect circle. So
it came in, I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. You could not have described a more perfect thing.
And then I think it's pronounced Tanya. Tanya Sturdy writes, I've been a huge fan for years, and after listening to Chris say that we should... go start our own thing. I did. I self-published a cookbook full of easy-to-make, delicious family recipes, a lot of love, and taste testing with my friends. Went into this book, and I would love to share it with people who may be wondering what they should make for dinner. It's called Recipes from the Sturdy Kitchen, and it's available on Amazon now.
Fantastic. This episode, I'm very excited about. I'm so excited about this. This is Ralph Macchio and William Zabka, who are promoting Cobra Kai, which is really good. Oh my God. It's on YouTube Red. The trailer for it, I saw like, I don't know, 2 months ago or something. And the trailer looked amazing and the series did not disappoint. And I immediately said to our booker, Debbie, we've got to get Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka on, if at all possible. And it turns out they were doing press. But, just one of those really strange, if you had told me when I was a kid watching Karate Kid 100 times or watching any of the movies that William Zabka played the antagonist in the 80s, whether it be Back to School or Just One of the Guys or, you know, or Karate Kid. And of course, they just both turned out to be great dudes, both of them. But I, what I love about the show, and I say this in the podcast, is that it's very gray. Like, who's, it's not just like, oh, Daniel's still the hero and John is still the villain.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, gray.
Yeah.
And it deals a lot with like shit that happens to you in high school that we all just can't let go of no matter what. We just get taken right back to high school in those situations. And it's, I thought it was really, really, really well done. So you should, if any of this is resonating with you in any way, you should watch Cobra Kai. It's on YouTube Red right now. And thanks to Billy and Ralph for coming on the podcast. This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com. I mean, you can get everything on demand, like this podcast, for instance, anything else, and listen wherever you want, whatever's convenient for you. So why are you still going to the post office to mail letters and packages when you can just get postage on demand? It just doesn't make sense to do it that way. So just use Stamps.com. You can access all the amazing services of the post offices right from your desk 24/7, whenever it's convenient for you. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter package using your own computer printer. The mail carrier just picks it up. You click print mail and you're done. It could not be easier. So you can use ID10T for the special offer, which includes up to $55 in free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in ID10T. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code ID10T. This episode also brought to you by Simply Safe. In 2017, the Better Business Bureau heard more than 5,000 complaints about alarm companies. That put home security in the top 10% of the most complained about industries. And here's how you fix home security. You do it with Simply Safe. Simply Safe got rid of contracts and hidden fees. They work to earn their customers' business instead of relying on tricks and fine print. Simply Safe is a company that will treat you well. You want to be protected by the company that's supposed to be helping to protect you. How rare is that today? A company that relies on good service and a great product, and they want to earn your business. So this is why they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau for 10 years running. And there are over 40,000 five-star reviews online. Simply Safe is what home security should be. You're getting the best protection, period. Learn more about Simply Safe today at simplysafe.com. That's SimpliSafe.com/ID10T. SimplySafe.com/ID10T to protect your home and your family with A-plus home security system. SimplySafe.com/ID10T. And speaking of that, this is the ID10T podcast, number 966, with Cobra Kai. Katie, sweep the leg.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Four episodes in, and this is the greatest fucking thing I've seen. I mean,
well, episode 5 is my favorite.
You know what's great about it is that it's, and we'll talk about this, we'll talk about a lot of things, but it's so perfectly done. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's because it, rather than trying to recreate exactly what the original thing was, which is what a lot of continuation type, you know, whether it's a sequel or a reboot or whatever. It's like, this is a slice of these guys' lives where you go, that's probably what would have happened.
Right.
And there, and no one, and so far, 4 episodes in, no one's really a hero, no one's really a villain, everyone's very human, mm-hmm. and just dealing with all of their with all of their issues, but it's so good. I'm excited for you guys.
Thanks. We're happy.
And I'm excited that I get to watch it. And I'm excited that this was the continuation of the story that I didn't know I needed.
Right.
And that I never knew I was going to get.
Nor that we knew we needed.
Yeah.
Did it sort of feel that way when you guys started? Like wrapping up an old, like wrapping up this chapter?
It was opening a whole new world. It was, you know, I think, I don't know if we expected it to be this way story-wise, but once we got into the characters and in the narrative that they wrote, it felt right. And it feels right.
The thing that I love about it is that it captures this idea, and maybe this is just, you know, maybe you have to be a certain age to get this thing, but no matter how old you are, the shit that happens to you in high school, it never goes away.
It's a fact.
It does not matter how many
things you achieve or how much you accomplish or how little you accomplish or however, you could still see someone who was a dick to you when you were 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
And you would instantly remember. You can't help it.
Right.
So true.
And it really captures all of that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Neither one of them are really beyond it.
Yeah. No, that's part of we talk about it all the time that, you know, the Karate Kid was – clearly very good over evil, black and white kind of storytelling, and where Cobra Kai is now, there's a lot of gray areas. Your allegiance changes episode to episode, and you know, so it humanizes these characters in a more complex way, or additionally to what it is. And in an interesting way, I didn't think about this till I really saw the series, season one, as we say, so far, is that you know, you mentioned for LaRusso, his worst nightmare is the Cobra Kai dojo opening. I mean, his whole childhood was getting his ass kicked by these guys that were everything wrong with martial arts from his perspective. And interestingly, when we come up, we meet him 30-something years later, it is actually Cobra Kai and him being sucked into that world that actually helps him find, and you'll see this as the season arcs out, as you've watched the rest of the episodes, it actually brings him balance in his adult life that he might have lost and got off the track with, and it kind of adds to that arc, and you know, whatever happened to the bully in high school is something that's not explored. So through the Johnny Lawrence character, that's a big part of what the writers do and what Billy does in a fantastic performance in the adult version of Johnny Lawrence.
Yeah, because John Avildsen directed that.
Yes.
Who also did Rocky. So it's basically Karate Rocky.
The Karate Kid.
Yeah, but I was so the perfect age when that movie came out, probably 14 or so. Mm-hmm. And so it just cemented into my psyche in a way, because I was a very nerdy kid. And so it did not give me any delusions that I could learn how to fight.
Were you doing the crane kick after?
Everyone did the crane kick. What are you talking about?
Even me, I did it.
Maybe I did it before you got here. I don't know.
I was telling you, the Cobra Kai t-shirt, man, I love it. They didn't make
Miyagi-Do karate shirt. Like, there was
no... They do have them, but they're not as in...
They're sold out. That's what it is. They're sold out.
We didn't need them. We just didn't need them. But no, it's always cool to be the bad guy. So what is quote unquote the bad guys?
Well, yeah, but also, I mean, it's not like I did not side with Cobra Kai when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I very much but it's still. Did anyone ever kind of? I'm sure you've discussed this a million times. Daniel LaRusso basically learns a lifetime of karate in about a month.
Right.
Well, is that about the right time frame?
Maybe a little bit longer than that. There had to be one or two montages. It's 80s montages that stretch that out. And it's
because then he immediately goes to Okinawa, and then he beats a guy who's literally karate. Yeah. Like, he's not even just learned. Like, he just is karate.
If you're going to spend this time breaking down the logic, the beauty of all this logic, you know, all that is that people are still talking about it.
Of course it is.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
But also just that, you know, I think it's more than excused in the fact that, you know, obviously Miyagi's character is he's a master,
right?
And he has heart. He's a human Yoda, and Daniel has heart, and he's from Jersey, and he's got, you know, like he's got a lot
little
of spirit.
Chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, he's got a little chip on his shoulder.
Listen, Daniel LaRusso had no business winning anything, and I think at that time that's what was part of the charm of it was aspirational wish fulfillment for anyone who saw that movie. I could be that. He was the kid next door,
right?
So, but as Daniel LaRusso as an adult, gets a little bit off the track, a little bit, you know, overconfident, and his feistiness and his temper that he had even as a teenager, you know, comes to the surface in the Cobra Kai show, and it adds to you know, like we talk about that allegiance. He's not always, you know, as warm and fuzzy as you might have thought he'd been, and needs to recalibrate. And that's part of hopefully long form storytelling.
I think what you said about high school, how you react to people and its incidents in high school is so true. And I think that this show really captures that in a really organic way. I feel like you feel that way. Like Johnny and Daniel, they came into each other's lives in their earlier days, and it shaped who they were. Daniel became the Karate Kid. Johnny kind of disengaged from Cobra Kai, and they're still in the same, you know, circle. And You know, it's just some, it's like kind of it's a natural feeling to see a Daniel LaRusso billboard and have that kind of reaction. The guy that kicked him, you know.
Well, yeah, but like anyone who hurt you. I mean, I know guys who still have not made peace with their bullies.
Right.
And like will go to reunion and think that they're okay because they're successful, and they get there and they just start shaking.
Right, right.
And they still can't. Totally. It's like on such a fundamental.
Primitive, yeah.
It is. It's a primitive because that just all. It just all fuses to your identity when you're a kid. And
Because those moments shape your whole...
Yeah, of course.
You're just growing. It's like you take that with you, man. It's like in high school, if you don't stand up to your bully and you get defeated, you're going to have that always. I had incidents in high school like that where I got in a fight and then later saw somebody and, you know, you still have that same dynamic. It's 20 years later and it's like... But then he's like, this guy's in the Marines now. And he's like, seriously, totally in the Marines.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he introduced me. He's like, yeah, this guy beat me up in high school. I'm like, no, you're this guy. Yeah.
You know, that was it.
Yeah.
Wasn't,
but I didn't beat him up. But I mean, you know, it's like, yeah. But that's a visceral emotion to see somebody and have that reaction. And it works, I think, here. And I think the audience has grown for these 30-some years with that. That's been replayed over and over and over again. So when the show starts, it feels it just kind of lands. And you're just kind of picking it up right now and feels feels like we're really with these guys, and we are.
Yeah, there was a girl who bullied me in seventh grade, I think, and
you wouldn't admit that
she was really yeah no
Did
I'm
you
comfortable
stand
with
up
it
to her
nope and I really hated her and like maybe I don't know 15-20 years later I ran into her. I went home to Memphis and I ran into her and she was like, hey, you know what, I was a real bitch to you, and like I was all prepared to be like.
Yeah.
Why were you? And she was
How did
like,
it feel
"I was
when
a
she
real."
Said that. Did you?
I was so conflicted,
really,
because I had just stored all of this
right,
like for years and years
ready
and years.
For your monologue.
I was just ready to be like, "And you have no power over you." Know, and she was like, "Yeah, I was. I had a rough time.
She took away right away."
Well, that's the thing.
The
yeah, it's like
wind up.
You don't when you're young, you don't realize that a lot of people who are dicks, like people who just go out of their way to be dicks or aggressive, probably don't have great lives, or there's something that is, you know, deeply flawed in their immediate relationships. And so, you know, it's like not that I feel like you almost do kind of feel bad. You're like, I don't appreciate the methods that you use to deal with those, but you were a kid. And you know what? I guess everyone's doing the best. But just that binary idea of like who's a bully and who's not and who's a. As you get older, you're like, oh, it's complicated. Mm,
totally.
It's complicated. But that's what's so great about the way your show is now is that everyone's complicated. No one's like one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it really could have just been that. And, you know, I think anyone else would have made it that way.
Yeah, definitely.
But you played at a certain point with all the roles you played, are you like, do I look like a dick? Why do people keep casting me in these roles? I mean,
for sure.
Back to School, Just One of the Guys, Karate Kid, all movies that I adored.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, were you like, what is going on?
Yeah, I think after Back to School, I kind of decided that was it with the bad guys. Although the rest of my career, there was some kind of version or some kind of tip or something to that. Yeah. When we did this one, I just wanted to make sure. I'm like, when they pitch it, I'm like, all as long as you're just not turning him, I'm doubling down on my dickness, and I'm not going to be the biggest asshole
doubling
of
down
all
on
time.
To be on
yeah.
Doubling down.
No, but like, you know, are you going to slaughter? Are we just going to go? Can you know admit to the world that this? Because you know, living with that, I mean, I'm an actor, but you know, there's that that response. So it's like, I want this guy to be human. As long as you know, I don't mind him being bad. I don't mean being wrong. But is he going to be a two-dimensional kind of jerk, you know, dick? And that's not appealing to me to play. So
no, yeah. And I also find that a lot of times people who play, like people who've played a few jerks on stuff, you're like, you meet them, you're like, fuck, they're like the nicest.
Right.
They're but so nice.
When I was a kid, my first movie, one of the first sets I was ever on was The Island that Michael Ritchie directed, and Michael Caine starred in it, and David Warner.
Wow.
He was a really famous bad guy villain.
Oh, David Warner.
Remember him?
Amazing. Yes,
yeah.
He was in Tron.
Yeah.
He was in
Incredible.
Time After Time.
And my dad was an AD on that, and I was a stand-in for the kid on that. So I'd go to Universal, and they'd set the lights on me. They'd bring the real actor in. And I remember meeting David Warner, who was he was like the pirate. He was the evil guy. And he was the nicest, sweetest human being ever, and Michael Caine as well. But it was really interesting and fascinating to be that young and be impressed on the performances where they were so evil, and then meet him and he was just such a complete polar opposite of that. So it was I kind of took that, I think, with me, because I remember being young, 14, 13, 14, and having these, you know, these stars pay attention to me and being so kind, and it really meant so much. Just that they didn't just walk around me and they had attitudes, but they were just like, hello. And it was just like a welcoming, like, oh, that's how you do it, you know?
That's nice.
I never
hear.
Thought I would apply that. Like, I didn't say, yeah, no, one day I'm going to be you doing that to kids, but I am, you know, now it is happening that way.
And someone just posted on Reddit a couple days ago, it was just a picture from The Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a picture, you guys are all in the back of the pickup truck.
Oh, right.
And it's an astonishing group of actors. Like, holy shit, that's almost all of them, one pickup truck. You got a Rob Lowe in there, you got a Swayze, you got Emilio Estevez, you, Tom Cruise,
Matt Dillon.
I mean, it is an unbelievable, I would love to kind of talk to both of you about being young and successful and famous in that during that time, right, in a pre-social media era.
Yeah, it is a different time.
You know, like, what is it? What does that mean? What does it feel like as it's happening? Or are you just thinking, well, I'm just an actor. I just want to stay employed. I don't really care about all that other stuff.
I mean, with The Outsiders, since you referenced that, that was a book I read when I was 12 years old. So it was probably the first book. It's definitely the first book I finished without my parents saying, keep reading. You know, you have to finish 10 pages a night. 10 pages a night is all we ask. You know, it was not unlike many people that were inspired to read based on S.E. Hinton's novels. I guess now it's J.K. Rowling or whoever. But so having the opportunity to be in that film was a big get. I wanted to play that part, and then it was Francis Coppola. It was like it was all the boxes were checked at that point, you could imagine. And so being in that, getting that part, felt a little, you know, you get a little spoiled when you read a book, you love the book, you love the part, it's one of your favorite directors, he's making the movie, and you get the part. It's like, okay, this is going to be a cruise,
right.
Cruise control. I think that, you know, you talk about pre-social media, there was less of that, you know. It was less of, you know you're getting the part before, I mean, you read about it before you get the call. It's crazy now, just how quick everything is, and everybody
right.
with a phone is a paparazzi. So I don't remember that, you know, that
yeah.
part. You had a little bit of time if you did something stupid, and I never did. I'm still looking to do something really stupid. but now I have a hit show, so I don't really have to do something stupid right now.
No, it's way claustrophobic now. Back in the day, it breathed a little bit, you know. Most of you'd go and look in the Team Beat magazine rack and see if you're on it, you know. Maybe, did you make the centerfold? Those days are sick.
Did TV Guide put your picture in it when they did the blurb? Did you get the TV Guide shot?
Right, right.
Or did it go to somebody else? You know, but going through all that stuff, because then The Karate Kid came right after that for me, it was, you know, it's a short – when I look at that window of time, it's kind of a short window for me just personally that, you know, whether it's The Outsiders, Karate Kid, My Cousin Vinny, it's only a couple of years.
Right.
And then, you know, it got pretty dry for a while through the 90s, and I, you know, raised my kids were born then, and when I look back at it, it was almost like I designed it beautifully to be there, but that wasn't completely by design. It was just, okay, the roles dried up for a bit.
Right.
But I always lived one foot in and one foot out of Hollywood. I only lived here in LA for 2 years. That was one of those years when I was on a show called Eight Is Enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that was before The Outsiders. And then I moved back to New York, and I've always home-based in New York. So I lived, for the most part, when I wasn't working, I was just back home, you know, going to see Mets games and hang out with my friends or whatever. And that's how I sort of balanced it. I would have been, as far as balancing and maybe going down a wrong path or a bad path, I think if I was in the social media, in the world where, you know, you were living every moment and it comes up on the computer in nanoseconds, that would be tougher to navigate. You know, not that I don't even know how you deal with that.
I think it's got to be harder for the young people today.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm talking as a young person.
And we're adults, so we can you know, process it. But when you're that young, 18, 17, and you're in
so
this, like,
seductive.
Millions of eyeballs on you everywhere you go, and, you know, I mean, that can do a number on you, I imagine, you know.
Yeah, but also, you also have the sort of the blessing and the curse of being in something that's so iconic.
Mm-hmm.
That you, I would imagine you do have to make peace with it at a certain point, wherever you are, in airports or whatever, people are doing the crane kick at you, or they're saying sweep the leg, or like whatever it is. Like they're the first persons person who's ever thought of it. And you just gotta like, oh, okay, hey, thank you.
Right.
You know. But it you know, was there a period where you kinda had to go, okay, I really just, you know, I was lucky to get to do this, and I really just need to make peace with this, but fuck, sometimes I just am not in the mood for it.
Right, every time there's a fly in a restaurant, yeah. I give myself 8 to 9 seconds to get out of the building. <'Cause, you> know, there's a fly on a window. I'm just like, we can't eat here. We can't eat
somebody,
here.
Someone's going to throw chopsticks at you. Like, okay, guys, come on.
Grab it now.
It was a, you know.
I would say 15, 20 years ago, there was probably that enough already moment for me. But I never would like say, come in, okay, we're going to go talk today, but he doesn't want to talk about that.
Right.
I've never done that. That's just silly to me.
Right.
And this movie, our movie, the Karate Kid, what it's become is bigger than both of us in pop culture, you know? So to be like, I'm only going to talk about this and enough of that. If you don't want to go out and hear it, then don't go out that
right.
day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think the movie just, it kind of became a shadow that you were, it's not, I never resented it at all. I think they could say sweep the leg all day long, but if it's becoming career-wise, I mean, when this thing's playing every single day in every country all day long, that's the image of who you are, and that's mm-hmm. out there. And it's hard to get around casting directors to say, well, that's who you are, and prove me wrong. And,
right.
you know, and then the parts are all kind of tied to that, like you're going to be this or that, or come in and play this bad guy. It's like, there's a lot more to me than that. And so that's more of where I pushed against. I was like, that pissed me off more. But, you know, as far as the movie, it's become, I mean, it shaped my life from then till now. I think I've lived longer with it than without it. So I wouldn't know whether if somebody didn't say sweep the leg at the airport.
I'd probably freak out. Hold on a second. Let me walk through again.
Anybody.
I'm going to put some quarters in my pocket and make this thing go off.
You play that Joe Esposito song on your phone.
Exactly. Let me do that again.
Does that make an appearance anywhere in the series?
I'm not going to tell you. Just watch.
Okay, good. I would imagine it. Because I also love... Another thing that I thought was such a great thing for John Lawrence's character is that there are so many different ways that suggest that he's stuck in that time period. Mm-hmm. The car and the music and his t-shirts.
The flip phone.
And it doesn't feel...
Flip phone's epic.
And it doesn't feel overdone to me. It's like, I think that's what that guy would do.
Yeah.
I really do think that's what that guy would do.
Yeah. I think he represents, I think it's some people like that.
And people love it.
I identify with that. I like the old school stuff. I like the old cars.
I just think, you know, when you look at what happened to this guy, he was so on track.
Right.
And then he got knocked off his axis and had no concept of who he was or what his identity was just fucking gave up. Like he just gave, because what's he gonna do without that?
Yeah, he's just spinning in an eddy of yesterday, you know?
Right.
Right. What do you think? Oh, see, this is probably a spoiler too, but maybe I make eye contact. Kreese, does Kreese make an appearance anywhere or do we... Okay, that's all I need.
You're on episode 4.
I mean, that's kind of a bit out of the bag at this point. You're just behind. Because it's just been announced that Martin Cove as John Kreese will be a series regular next year.
Great.
So I just spoiled it for you.
That's okay.
But
all of
your fans have seen this.
Can I tell you something? It's not going to make me want to watch it less. Yeah. Like, it's only going to make me want to watch season 2 more.
It's a nice it's a good reveal. It's a good setup and payoff. And but that's all we have from this point forward as far as that. And season 2, you know, has been picked up. So we're... In early, the writers are, you know, just hunkering down now and just starting to.
It's John Hurwitz, is that correct?
John Hurwitz, Hayden Schlossberg, and Josh Heald.
So John was responding to some folks because I said, "Oh, I love the series," and John responded to me, and then some guy complained, like, "I mean, I loved it, but you know, I gotta wait like a year or something for season 2."
And so
I said to the guy, "Hey, man, you waited 33 years to get the first season.
Right.
So a handful more months is it's not going to – it's going to be fine."
That's right.
And they could rewatch the season 1 because there's – on reviews, there's lots of little stuff peppered in that you'll miss the first time. It's how well-layered and how well-crafted these guys handle this and how they handle the nostalgia element, the flashbacks, some clips from the original film – angles and shots that were never even edited into the original film that they had access to that changed the perspective.
Yeah.
The relevance of this young cast. We have this great young cast and
all the young people are fantastic.
Yeah, and they look good too. It's like it's check.
Everyone's really great. But I also in the story in the universe, I love that for part 2, for Karate Kid 2. It's like you could. It's just like that thing of high school romance where you're so into someone, another perfect person, and then a few months later, it's like, yeah, she dumped me for another. Like it just. It's like, oh yeah, that's what happens in high school. You know, like 1 minute you think this. Oh, this is gonna be it forever, and like a month later, like, oh yeah, they didn't really work out. Didn't really work out too well. Do you? Were there particular projects that you? I mean, Back to School was another one of my all-time favorite movies.
Triple Lindy. That was my favorite. If I had to remake a movie, that would be it, just for the party it was.
It was fun.
Oh, it was so much fun. It was ridiculously fun. It was like not making a movie. I don't even remember making the movie. It was just, you know, fun. The cast was amazing. And on location. And
Dangerfield.
Yeah. Dangerfield's great. And Sam Kinison and young Robert Downey Jr. and Keith Gordon, Terry Farrell. Sam we had so much fun on that. It was just a party. It was a, you know, like Twist and Shout, the scene in the bar. You know, the Twist and Shout scene, you know. And Burt Young and the whole, I mean, that was a blast. It was just so much fun.
Yeah, that is a fun movie because in the pantheon of, like, you know, nerds beat the jocks kind of movies, no one really gets their ass kicked. No. It's just like, who's a better diver?
Exactly.
Like, that's so, and I'm sure the pitch for that was so ridiculous because it was Dangerfield.
Yeah.
And yet I completely bought it.
Yeah.
There's no reason Rodney Dangerfield should have ever been standing on a dive board, and I know that was the part of the joke, but I was in. Like, I was in 110%.
No shots of him doing that. So Triple Lindy when he goes and then he's smiling.
Slow motion.
But I feel like if we didn't have a movie like Back to School, a whole generation after of, like, you know, we wouldn't have had any of those, like, Ben Stiller, Will Ferrell, like any of those movies that I think use the DNA of those movies to sort of, you know, to play off what those things were of, like, we're the best, man. Right. We're going to win this.
Right.
But what an incredible time.
Yeah.
And when you're making Karate Kid, do you understand what it is that you're making while you're making it? Like, do you feel that it's special? I know it can be a little weird when you're working on something you don't want to think, like, this is going to be huge.
Yeah.
But did it have that feeling as you're making it?
I always say this. One of the things I felt is I felt that Pat Morita and I had a special sort of soulful chemistry together. It just, you know, I call it a soulful magic. It was something that when we were working together, those scenes were just easy. It just seemed right, and he seemed very locked in, and he took very, very good care and responsibility for playing that Japanese-American character. I talk about that they dealt with the internment camps and during World War II, and it was the first time a mainstream movie ever dealt with that. So I felt that we had some special things there. I felt that the concept, you know, the title, I loathed the title because I said, if this thing ever hits, I'm going to have to carry it forever.
Did you say it was a Bruce Lee? It sounded like a Bruce Lee comedy.
Yeah, right. And then initially they wanted, like, Toshiro Mifune, some great Akira Kurosawa actor, to play Miyagi. You know?
Right.
And Pat Morita came in. The studio was unsure. That turned out an Academy Award nominated performance. But
yeah.
But so I felt that there were moments, special moments when we were making it. I was hoping it would be a hit. I had no idea. Thought it might have been a little corny, a little, like I said, black and white, good over evil, no gray areas. Whether we'd be talking about it now, and then whether this pop culture, wax on, wax off, would be in the dictionary, or the crane kick would be a move that's known around the planet. That's, you know, get him a body bag, take a worm for a walk week. I mean, who, you know, this stuff, it just, it's on, that's beyond.
I had nothing to measure. You did Outsiders before that. I had done, that was my first film, so that was my first experience, and I would just assume that all of them would feel that way. It felt special. It felt like we were doing something. I was 18 learning karate. It felt emotional. It felt real. But I had no idea what John Avildsen was doing, what the music was doing, the cameras were doing. We had no idea until I went to the premiere and saw this. And I remember cheering, you know, jumping on my feet, getting chills when I got kicked, when the part where he says, show, you know, that moment, and you do that, and it all came together. I didn't see it. I mean, I saw it in the script, but I didn't watch it even be filmed, and there it was. And I got, so all of a sudden, you felt this experience, and afterwards, it was like, wow, there's this glow, this buzz. But who could have ever imagined that it was going to march on? We didn't even know there was going to be HBO and cable and digital and all this stuff. And I don't even think VHS were out yet, quite yet.
They were. It was
starting.
Still relatively new at that point.
But you can never imagine it marching on like this, because it would be in the theaters for a certain amount of time. But I could tell you in other movies after that, I always measured it against the experience of the Karate Kid, and it never felt like that. I've never had a feeling where everything just – there was just some kind of a vibration thing that was happening really along the way. I mean, I've done some good things that felt great, was I'm proud of, but the Karate Kid was definitely special, and I felt it return on the set of Cobra Kai.
Yeah, I agree.
I honestly did. And we filmed it. I thought, man, this thing that was there is here, unless I'm tricking myself. Like, off camera, it was alive. And,
yeah.
And then it translated in front of the camera, and the energy around it, it felt special. I'm like, man, I'm just either – my mind's playing with me or this is really happening.
I felt the same way. It's crazy. And now this response, both the fan response, the amount of views, the – you know, millions and millions of views, and the critics' response across the board, that's even bigger than I expected. I mean, it's like it's kind of right now. It's like everything's right. It's kind of as good as it gets when you're coming back to something again. It's almost like lightning is struck twice with this blessed franchise in this way. At least the part of it that I was involved with, you know, It's pretty incredible.
Well, I think because it's obvious that you care about it.
Yeah.
And also, you did it the right way. Like, it doesn't feel like, well, this thing was popular in the 80s, so we're just going to milk that and do it in a cheap way to just get some nostalgia points. Like, everyone's really good at it, and it's really great.
And what's interesting that you say, I think when the announcement was made, which is a little bit, less than a year ago, when we did the TCA and Billy and I walked out and said, you know, YouTube has this show, and this, there was a little bit of exactly that, certainly from the industry. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Right.
It's a cash grab and it's YouTube. They couldn't even get it to Netflix.
Right.
You know, all this. Everyone had this, all right, show. Okay, I guess I'll watch it because I love the movie, and even though it's going to be horrible, I'm going to watch it anyway. You know, because we were reading this stuff. And then there were other people saying this is the greatest thing in the world, but there was. So I think everyone was sort of back on their heels, waiting for it to be, you know, the epic fail of their favorite childhood movie.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And it was also announced as a comedy, so that made everybody get afraid that, okay, so is it going to be a parody? Is it going to be – and then the fact that it has all these layers and these guys, you know, wrote with such care and a detail and attention to nostalgia and to respect of all the characters – in the film, and then create a fresh, young, new, relevant world for today. Everyone was like you're reading, this doesn't deserve to be this great, but it's the best thing I've seen. That's what we're reading, and it's really quite humbling and you know, spectacularly rewarding. I think
the distance. I think the stepping into it, kind of wading into it knee deep, it was is fair for the fans when they're like, I don't know. I said, you do it. We did that. When we approached this, our first thing, is this going to be cheese? Is this going to be nostalgia? Is this black and white, good or bad? We approached it the same kind of, you know, resistance and cautiousness. And it was proved to us by the writers, and we trusted till we gave 100% and did it. And then I think the fans had the chance to have that same experience of, are they going to let this in or not? And is it going to be, you know, and I think so.
It's, yeah, they want
they
you
had
right,
a similar
though.
Situation.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
They wanted it to be everything they wanted it to be.
Right.
So I think when they had these sort of Fathom screening events, or the first two episodes are free to everyone, you know, the super fans watched it like with one eye half open. Don't mess up my childhood.
Yeah, it's a sacred thing. Yeah.
And then so they were all so you know, relieved. And then it turned out to be, you know, arguably for them, better than expected. And on top of that, you have high school kids and college kids, my son's college friends, my daughter's friends, they're in their 20s.
Yeah.
And my nieces and nephews that are 16, 17, all their friends, they're just binge watching the show. I mean, when does that happen?
You now have source material to go back and look. And the original Karate Kid still holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still a great, it, you know, I mean, with the exception of the music, it nothing else about it feels like, oh, this is so 80s. Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe some of the lingo or Take a Worm for a Walk week. But other than that, it's like the movie holds up it's still really, good.
Despite the big hair and 80s.
Take a Worm for a Walk week's coming back, though. I mean, that's going to be
sure
that's
it.
I'm
sure it will. T-shirts and that and doubling down on fitness.
Yeah. But you know, the funny thing is, I know that there are guys like that would say, must be take a worm for a walk week and then turn around and be like, swish.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
Nailed it. Like, what did you just say? Right. Think about, really think about what you, really think about. Was it really a sick burn? Was it really a sick burn? But it also shows that, you know, it's just that thing of, you never know what's going to happen, what's going to come back around. You know, like you said, oh, in the 90s, things sort of dried up. I didn't know. You must have felt like, well, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's it. And then now here you are, you know, you're both working and you're working on great stuff and it's never, you know, nothing's ever done. Like
it's cyclical and you just keep, you have to always reinvent. I mean, you always have to, you know, look for what's next, whether it's a smaller role in the right thing. And then you have a big mainstream thing like this that's hitting on all cylinders. You just got to keep working or be creative behind the camera. We've both done that. In those drier times where the roles weren't coming from the acting perspective, you would write or direct, and as long as you maintain a way of being creative and telling a story in some fashion, that's what I need. Yeah. I mean, making a living at it is another story. You know, you just never know when that's gonna happen. But fortunately for us, we've figured out or got lucky enough and made the right decisions. We feel really smart right now. I said that to him an hour ago. Don't you feel like the smartest guy? We both seemed like, you know, we've waited and we've said no a long time. We both have. But like, who knew we said yes at the right time? It did feel right, though. Yeah. It felt like the timing was right. The landscapes were right, meaning these streaming services. If I talk about telling a 5-hour movie and slicing it up in 10 half-hour parts, you didn't have the ability to do that 10 years ago. You were either a major motion picture sequel or 24 episodes on a broadcast network. And now you have these other platforms. And just their, you know, the writers, their vision. It was very detailed, specific, and, you know, they knew way more than I do. Did about this original movie, and so it was time to jump in. We did, and we seemed really smart.
What I'd love to hear about Abelson as a director, like how is he conveying this story to you, and how is he making sure that you know that you aren't that you don't go so far to be like, okay, that's a comic book bully, and you know, like how does Daniel seem strong and not like, you know, Just a ragdoll nerd who's getting his butt kicked around the yard. Like how did he give you dimension? Did he give that to you, or did he work with you, or did you bring that to the table? Like,
there were a decent amount of rehearsals. We had a couple of weeks of rehearsals, which is not always something you have the opportunity for.
Yeah,
I certainly had. I had about 5 weeks of martial arts training, and during that. We would have
it's about as long as Daniel had.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. 5 weeks and he was ready.
And 5 weeks is like an hour a day.
Right.
This is not like 10 hours in the gym.
Right, right.
Drinking 5 raw eggs and running. No, it's like, you know, I rode the bike a little bit and I did a couple of, you know, kicks and punches. No, we worked on all that stuff and there was a lot of prep time for that. But, you know, we had to trust in John, obviously a great filmmaker. Save the Tiger was one of my favorite films of his besides Rocky and some of the others back at that time. And so there was a trust in the fact that he knew how to tell this kind of underdog story. My first reading, I don't know if yours – do you have the tape of your first – because
audition.
You were on set. It was a little different then.
Yeah.
But my first reading of Daniel LaRusso is something you can watch on YouTube. My first – I mean, it's Avildsen talking me through.
Yeah.
He's got a camera here and we just – he's explaining the scene and I'm just sitting there, you know, and we just read it. And he has Pat Morita's first scene and he's actually cut them together. And it's great watching because you see those two characters come to life without us really having worked it through.
Right.
You know, it says something about casting. When you got the right kid and the right actor or whatever, it's evident. But he was very improvisational through the rehearsal process. He shot everything on video. Billy and I shot all our scenes on video. He mapped it out. We went sometimes to the locations, other times on sound stages. So it was very much like a little bit of theater camp. And he was editing, you know, raw, you know, kind of like VHS footage.
He made the movie before he made the movie.
He made the movie, the whole thing.
He saw angle for angle, shot for shot, tone even, working with us in the scenes. he had the whole shot, the movie in his head before he went to shoot one lick of film.
Yeah. And he always inspired us as young directors to do that. He said, don't conceptualize it. Get it out there and shoot it. And then before you get there on the day.
He was a pretty hands-off director on set. You remember? I mean, at least for me, he was. He would just, you know, you come up with an idea, but he had it in rehearsals and he would let you go and do it. And maybe he'd give a note or you'd come and ask him a question and he'd go, no. Or, yeah, try that. But mostly it was,
When he didn't like something, he would just say, let me be you for a second. And he would always come in and he'd act it out like me. You know, there are certain actors that didn't like that. You know, all of a sudden you're saying, okay, here's how I want you to act this.
Yeah.
I didn't have much of a problem. You know, I got to have lunch a little earlier if I did it the way I wanted.
Right.
You know, there were sometimes I disagreed with certain things. But at the end of the day, just like with John, Josh, and Hayden on Cobra Kai, the filmmakers get the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're trusting their vision, and they're seeing it from a bird's eye view. You know, you have to believe in that. It's, you know, I guess you made a mistake if you're getting involved with something where every day you're disagreeing with the filmmaker.
Was there anything that you disagreed with when it happened, and then you saw it, and you're like, oh, I guess he was right. I guess that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. A ton. I wish. I mean, there were some I came up with that were mine, but there were many of them that were his. I hate this bike, this stupid bike, throwing it into that Steadicam shot.
Yeah.
It's really a wonderful mother-son scene of teen angst. I always felt it like cursing at the bike nonstop. It's like, oh, this is so over the top. This is so over the top. And then when I saw it, you know, it's great. And so that's where I disagreed on the day. The one I agreed on the day, and it's still one of my favorite moments in the film, is after the Miyagi drunk scene when Daniel goes to leave and he turns back and he bows to Miyagi after he's asleep and just takes that moment of respect before he leaves and sets off to train himself and the Bill Conti music and all that. I get like, you know, I'm like a little kid, get all misty eyed and goosebumps, and it's great every time.
That's fantastic. What about for you?
He let me go. I mean, I think I didn't have as many scenes as Ralph did, and I didn't have as many lines and talking. A lot of mine was action stuff. So he just let me go and make modifications here and there. Just trust him. I think you're as good as your director and your script at the end of the day. And that's it. And he knew it. He had his whole movie in his head, and he painted me into the story he was making. So you just trust that, and you know, you do your thing, and you know, he'd push me here, get a little more intense over here, this and that. But he pretty much cast it the way he picked the right people for the right parts, and the script did the driving, and rehearsed it, and then at the end he put his music in there and in his edit, because he was an editor first too.
Yeah, cameraman.
He's an incredible
editor,
you know. So he's an incredible storyteller.
Yeah, we miss. I mean, I guess you know, a lot of people saying, "Oh, it's too bad Pat Morita is no longer here to see the success of Cobra Kai." And he certainly, his character Miyagi is woven throughout the series and will continue to be. But I guess for me, it's John not being here, able to see this is what I miss the
Indeed.
Most. And it's nice Robert Kamen, who wrote the original.
Right.
Film is he's so happy. He's so excited.
That's great.
Because of how, as a writer, he saw the way these fanboys, these guys that are just turning 40 years old, took this and added other layers to it. And he's so excited for Billy and myself and everybody involved. And that's cool.
Yeah. Well, and because Pat was, you know, most people knew Pat from Happy Days,
where
he was hilarious, but a very, you know, one-dimensional character. He would just come in and cackle, and people would laugh, and then he'd walk off. But you know, but he was a groundling. He was a master improviser and a sketch comedy guy.
And that only started at 30 years old. He went into stand up. So
oh wow,
yeah. So it wasn't like something he pounded in high school and that started at 30 years old is when he got his break. Red Fox gave him his start down in Vegas, you know.
Wow. Yeah, because that was a whole – seeing him as Miyagi was, to people who are familiar with him before, was a whole other dimension.
Oh, yeah.
And those were days when, you know, the industry's changed so much now. But in those days, people were either comedy people or they were drama people or they were television people or they were film people.
Exactly.
And that was pretty much – and even below that was like – in the 80s, it started getting into like, okay, well, you're either a network television person or a cable person, and that's it. And now everyone's everything.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't, you know, like it rightfully doesn't matter anymore. It's like good work is good work. It doesn't matter where it is or, you know. But you did a series for a while.
Yeah.
Was it, were you like 4 years maybe?
Equalizer.
Equalizer for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years.
The Equalizer.
Equalizer. It was a great experience, that one. Yeah. That was like, you know, not playing a villain. That was a
finally
human being. Yeah. Yeah, that was great. Worked with some great actors in New York on that. That was kind of my, that was my acting school, I would say. With those great actors, Robert Mitchum and Shirley Knight and Richard Jordan. There's some great actors. And Edward Woodward, who played the Equalizer. Yeah. That was like, you know, coming out of the movies I came out of, the teen movies, except for Karate Kid. The others were kind of, you know, funny comedies. But to go into a drama with this kind of writing and directing and be in New York and stand toe-to-toe with these legends was an incredible film school for me.
And you're also doing episodes probably really fast, too.
Yeah, right? But I was recurring, so I wasn't doing them back-to-back. I would do maybe 4 or 5 a year or something. So I'd like maybe I'd do one, there'd be a two-parter, so I'd work for 2 weeks or something. But that was incredible, that experience. Yeah.
I tweeted at you a few years ago because
How did I not see that?
If I tell you, you'll remember probably because you tweeted back.
Oh, good.
But I don't know why, but they had me come on to Family Guy and basically voice you.
Oh, is that you?
Yes.
That's you at the lockers?
Yeah.
You're nice.
Yeah.
Good work.
Just my friends.
I approve.
My friends all, you know, work on the thing and they're like, oh, would you want to come in? I go, sure. And they go, hey, we're doing a Karate Kid thing. And so I basically just came in and be like, you're going down to that karate tournament or whatever. So, and that was it.
Yeah,
like, it took literally 4 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a year later, they were like, hey, your thing's on. And I got so excited. I think I tweeted.
Maybe I was so long ago, I didn't realize.
It was a while ago. It was like 3 or 4 years ago. But it was sort of playing off that idea of like, because I think the joke was like, karate's dumb. Well, you guys do karate? That's
right,
lame. You
know? Right.
But my friends, two of my friends, this guy's called the Sklar Brothers, have this whole stand-up bit about are you going to the karate tournament? Of course. What do you think? The traffic jam? Just the idea. Because I don't think anyone had thought, you know.
Like they
And you guys even kind of address it in the series. You're like, well, it was a really big deal.
It was
a really big deal.
It's like football in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Was there any conversation of like,
do people really go to karate tournament? One of my early notes, right after the first pitch, from John, Josh, and Aiden before I signed on completely. It was about, you know, I had a lot to digest. We both did. And I said, okay, I'll get back to you. I'm just digest this, get back with questions. And one of the things I said was like, you know, I get that Johnny Lawrence was living in the past, but like, because I guess Rocky Balboa or Apollo Creed like lost, but it was the heavyweight championship of the world.
Televised. Yeah.
This is like at Cal State Northridge gym.
Right.
Did it really take him down for 30 years? And we just had this conversation about it, and they talked from the perspective of when it's in your head and you're in this, and they talked about the whole thing. It's like winning a champion in high school football in Texas. You're a hero.
Right.
And so I bought it. And you know what? They were right.
Because whatever community you're in, whatever the thing is there, is a big deal.
Yeah.
And if you're super into it and it doesn't work out the way you want, I mean, it's like you're a young teenager that's devastating.
That's right.
Like, it's basically Biff. It's basically Back to the Future in the alternative Biff.
Right.
The alternative Biff where he's waxing the car. He got his ass kicked once and just shattered.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it also shows you, and it should show people, just how fragile the bully mind actually is. Yeah.
They're just one click from the cliff, man.
Of course, the bad lesson of that is like, God, I only have to take a bully down once, but then maybe that bully actually would just keep coming back and beating the shit out of you. Like, no, you're supposed to go down once.
Right.
And then you're supposed to be drinking beers for breakfast in like 30 years. Right. This is not...
Yeah, this isn't how it goes.
I've seen
the movies.
This isn't how it goes at all.
Right.
But what year was Vinny? What year was My Cousin Vinny?
92.
That was 92.
Yeah, and we shot in 91 in Atlanta. And we shot this in Atlanta, so I'm 2 for 2.
You're 2 for 2 in Atlanta. Yeah. That was another one that I feel
and
like...
And L.A. We do a decent amount in L.A. too at Cobra Kai for the exteriors.
But, oh, you got to give the valley.
Yep. It's a big character in the show.
It says Reseda on your building.
I know, man.
You know, like, if any... Karate Kid, Reseda really needed Karate Kid because it's basically the Karate Kid, and they even make a joke about it in the thing of like the porn industry.
Right, right.
It's like that's kind of that's that part of the valley. Right. So they really, really kind of they really needed you.
Needed a comeback.
The address that is the Cobra Kai address, is that an actual
on
address?
Victory Boulevard? I hope not, man. I don't know. It's out there though.
Some weird candle shop.
Yeah, right. Why do you keep showing up here?
Right.
Get rid of Karate Train. We sell candles. But My Cousin Vinny was another one of those movies that I just feel like just came out of nowhere and then was blindsided pop culture when the movie came out.
Yeah, that's like a drop the remote movie. It's a late for dinner movie. When it's on, you're going to be late for dinner.
Yeah.
It's just and once again, it goes back to the script. You know, that's a – interestingly, Karate Kid and My Cousin Vinny are so different, but yet it's still fish out of water. It's overcoming obstacles. It's setups and payoffs, and those are the things that work, and great casting. You know. Yeah.
So you said in the 90s, you said, oh, things kind of dried up a little bit.
In the late 90s.
In the late 90s. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Because I would think coming off of My Cousin Vinny, which was a tremendously successful movie.
Right.
So at that point, are you thinking like, oh, I can pick and choose, or I don't know what I want to do?
You always think that at the young age. I have a quote that is in one of these, a book or something, where I said, yeah, I figure I'm going to work on and off, and, you know, for the most part up to my early 30s, and then I'm just going to kick back. It's the stupidest.
Is that right?
I have it. It's on paper. I'll show it to you. And in a book, like a Ralph Macchio book with pictures of me.
Kick back after 30.
Yeah, it's like that's what I'm
when you're really old, you know where
exactly
you're
right.
Like into my, I think it was mid-30, maybe 35.
Right.
And I look at, and that is just youth is wasted on the young. Just the stupid
thing. You
know
what, when we were growing up,
because it was easy for me at the start. It really was.
Sure.
I had to, in a weird way, I almost had to try to not get shit.
Right.
Like, I got almost every part for a chunk of time.
Right.
Not all the way up into My Cousin Vinny, but because My Cousin Vinny, right before them, that was a hard sell, believe it or not. My agent at the time had to sell 20th Century Fox hard on me playing the Italian cousin of Joe Pesci, but they were talking about Ben Stiller and Will Smith because they were both hot at the time. They were both on the upswing, and so that was the beginning of it. Right around 1990, I started to feel that change. But up until that point, it was kind of, it just kept happening. So I sort of paid my dues after.
Right.
It's like I didn't pay my dues and finally get my break. I got my break and then stuck around for a while and then spent, 10 or 15 years doing stuff in between, some behind the camera, some on camera, and that were, it's tougher to string them together, but somehow survive.
That is kind of rough when you work a lot when you're young, and then if times change or studio heads change or whatever and things just change, you're like, I don't understand. I'm doing the same shit I was doing. Why is this not working now? I don't understand. Yeah. Why is this not working now?
Yeah.
So, like, what is the wisdom that you've gleaned, now that you've come out on top and mm-hmm. you're everything's great and, what's the words of advice that you would give?
Well, it's, I have a pretty grounded family life, which is the balance I talk about, having one foot in and one foot out. I've always, spent time in the business, but I spent a time away from Hollywood, away from it all. So that's how I sort of was able to balance that. The wisdom, I mean, be smart with your money when you have it. That's a piece of wisdom. So there's that. Someone said you have to feel that you have no choice but to do this in some way. And if you could be creative in some way, like I said before, making a living at it is something different than being – you could always be creative. You could be in theater. You could write scripts. You could make movies now, on your iPhone or video. I mean, you could do anything creative. It's how to make a living at it that's not really in your control.
Right.
So I think I'm looking for the pearl here. It's more specific to me and how I've been able to balance it in my life and in my marriage and in my family and all that and maintain sanity. all good things to those who wait, and good things come to the good people. I'd like to believe that's the case, and that's why this is happening for us. But, you know, a couple of good writers and a smart franchise helps too, you know.
And also, it's good that you guys took care of yourselves.
Yep.
Good docs.
You got.
Good
docs. I mean, it almost – there's something about John Lawrence in this where almost like – I think he looks a little too healthy.
No way. How's that possible?
Because you're in good shape still.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I kind of wonder if that John Lawrence would have been like 300 pounds.
He would have been a little heavier. But
he didn't have enough time. They didn't have enough time to shoot that.
I actually dropped some pounds when we from the time we announced it to the time we shot it, because I was like almost pushing 200. And I went, you know.
You're a tall guy, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's okay. But it was a little bit of, you know, I had to trim it down. Remember? I came on set. I was almost 180. Then 177 is getting a little too thin.
Yeah, then we were saying, stop. You're getting gaunt. Stop.
Yeah. It was like the, yeah. I mean, I was.
We both have
like
that problem. We both, you know, try to get in better shape. And as you lose the weight around your midsection, so you tighten up.
You lose it everywhere.
You realize your face is looking like
starting you get sucked up.
But it's, you know, we've preserved decently well. Knock wood. Yeah. And I would imagine if we walked in, you know, and they went to pitch us and we looked nothing like the guys, that might have been.
But I figured Johnny had to be like, he's the kind of guy that can drink a case of beer and not gain a, get a beer belly. Like, I imagine like his metabolism, his makeup, like Johnny's just kind of like.
So, his good genes.
Yeah, his good genes. As much as beers he drinks, he still, you know, somehow holds together pretty well.
It's many breakfast beers.
I could easily played him as the opposite of that and said, oh, he's a beer drinker. I don't have to do anything. I'm going to actually go that way.
Yeah.
You know, so if they had the luxury. You know, if you had the luxury where, okay, we're going to shoot these first few episodes here and then we take a break, and you could have, you know, fluctuated where he was out of shape and then got injured.
Yeah, yeah.
But we didn't have – I mean, we shot this thing in 10 weeks, you know, 10 episodes. It was 5 days, you know, we block shot two at a time. 10 days for two episodes, which is very challenging.
That is crazy.
It was really, because there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
It's not a simple, you know, two or three locations. There's a lot of cast, a lot of story, a lot of action scenes.
A lot of like, oh, it hurts when I spin my, a spin kick doesn't feel great.
Yeah, not like it used to.
Doesn't really feel that good.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I threw a front kick in one of those, in the dojo scene where I'm celebrating getting back in the All Valley tournament. I don't know if you've seen that episode yet. Probably just spoiled for you.
That's all right.
But I threw a front kick with just shoes on, and I felt like a grapefruit landed on my hamstring and just pulled in, and I couldn't stand up. Like, it was a divot in my muscle. All my muscles caved in. It was almost like a really bad pull. And then I went to step down on it, and it was really painful. I thought I ripped it. And then next time I had to do the same thing, but I ended up having to kick with my other foot because of that. So my kicking foot became my plant foot. And it was super painful. I'm like, wow. And I had to stretch.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
You gotta stretch.
You have to stay warm.
You used to have to stretch. You're like, touch toes.
When you're a kid, you're already warm.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah, then you're fine.
Yeah.
But I also like that there's a subtle suggestion, not even a subtle suggestion, but when you guys first meet, about the point of view of what the original story was. For you, it was probably like, you know, just new kids. People just give him shit for no reason. He's got to fight back. And your perspective was like, you did steal my girlfriend.
Right.
It's like, so from your point of view, it's like, douchebag, you know, like East Coast douchebag comes into town, just fucking takes my girlfriend, and everyone feels so bad for him, you know, like from your point of view, it's a totally different story.
Yeah. There's so much more. Once
you'll
watch
see that
the rest,
later,
it's so, it's great. So you have to watch the rest of the series.
I 100% am going to watch
because
the rest
of the
series.
So much, there's so many
it's
great.
It's like a prism. These guys created it. You can look at this story through any angle and it makes sense. You just turn it a little bit and you could see through anybody's eyes and it makes perfect sense, which is like life in a way. You know, everybody's got their own point of view coming in to make this, you know, this thing. And that's what this is. It's like it's deep like that.
Well, as we're wrapping this up and allowing you to I think this is the end of your – this might be the end of your press cycle for this.
Yes.
After this, it's just you high five and credits roll. But just two random things from one thing from each of you. Like, what's something you're really excited about right now? Doesn't have to be your show or work or whatever, or it can be.
Uh-huh.
But just in general, just like personal question, what are you excited about right now? What kind of gets you jazzed and happy at the moment?
Well, it's tough not to point it towards what's going on in my career at the time. I mean, you know, it's excited. My son just graduated college, Boston College, so really proud of him. My daughter graduated a few years ago, so I, thankfully, from the maternal side of the gene pool, I have two intelligent kids that are off in a good direction. So that's really something personally exciting. Having the Cobra Kai show doing across the board at this level, I'm shooting season two of The Deuce for HBO. And that's a totally different, it's a gritty documentary style drama about the birth of the porn industry in New York City. So it's kind of fun to have a role peppered throughout that series and then have this. So right now, you know, those elements are things that I'm all excited about. And
fantastic.
Hopefully keep this 15 minutes going as long as possible one more time.
What about you?
Like you said, this is kind of the end of our press tour, so it's been a long journey from pitch to shooting to the press to the whole response to season two being renewed. So we're at the back end of that, and so I'm actually excited about just turning it all off for a minute and being with my kids. I got a little boy and a little girl.
Oh, nice.
Coach baseball. Yeah, they're my little life. So I teach, you know, they're swimming. We're swimming. We're going surfing. We're going camping. And it's just the real life. You know, it's what means the most to me. And this is all great and great to, you know, to bring it to the family, but I cherish that. So that's what's my
that's nice. And it also, because when you're young, it's like that, like the work and the jobs, I feel like that's all you got, right? You know, and then you get older, you go, I mean, there's other stuff.
That's right.
Yep. It kind of takes the pressure off. Yep. And isn't it nice to enjoy what you do but not feel so precious about it? Like, if I stopped doing this now, I'd be okay. Like, I still got all this other great stuff going on.
Exactly. I would just say one thing about if I give any advice, I don't have advice, but I can just tell you that hindsight's 20/20. And if I could look back, if I could look ahead and see what was coming, like in the times where it's dry and it's not working out, and you never know what's around the corner, but you can look back and see all these kind of mountaintops, and then the growth is in the valley where you get your character, where you get all your experience. And so the journey's in the destination. The journey is the destination for me. And you show up and something like this, you know, presents itself, and it all makes sense. So, you know, that's my advice. You can't map it out. There's no map for this. And like you said, you're fully committed. I always say, you know, like, it's not a career, it's an expedition, and you're out in the middle of the sea, and sometimes you're going to go into an island, you're going to get fruit and honey, but most of the time it's salty fish and rain, dude.
Right.
And you got to hang in there, and you have to know something in yourself that, you know, there's a reason that you're there, you know, that you're in for the long haul, and the success isn't measured by how well people know you or how well you're doing, but on what makes you complete. And that's why I know we're both, you know, I'm a writer too, I produce, I direct, and I'm happy equally. I'm an editor even. I'm equally happy and fulfilled in any one of those categories. And this time the acting came back, and I'm, you know, and that's my new joy, and everything's kind of on hold right now. So that's it, you know, find your peace in your journey, and it somehow works out.
God, you know, such great advice from a guy when I was a kid, I was like, that guy would totally beat me up.
Yeah,
he's clearly not doubling down on his
I keep calling what happened to doubling down on dickishness?
I just love that.
Come on, man.
I had to say it one more time.
Double down on dickishness.
Is there anything else you want to plug while you're here?
No, man. Just plug season two.
Yeah, there we go.
So we're plugged season. So season one right now of Cobra Kai, YouTube Red. The Deuce coming back, second season on HBO. And then, I think I may have omitted C. Thomas Howell from The Outsiders.
That's right. And Diane Lane.
Diane Lane in there as well.
Leif Garrett.
And then also, I feel like I don't hear as many people talk about it, but people should go back and watch Just One of the Guys. It's a fucking great, one of my favorite weird comedies of the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. I love that movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of fans of that movie. Yeah,
it's still
There's a lot of people's first exposure to the female anatomy in that movie.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
The big boob scene at the end.
That's right.
A lot of young teenagers first. Like there it was. It was kind of a big moment.
Well, now you got them running right
big
now.
Big moment. 80s cinema history. Yes, please. Sorry, Joyce.
You know what? You know what? I'm gonna tell you something. It doesn't. Teenagers now.
Oh yeah.
It just doesn't really. Like, I got boobs. I got dicks. What do you want? I got tons of stuff. I can see everything right here. Yeah, it's right here.
It was a fun movie. That of the characters I played that were villains, he was the hardest. He wasn't the most redeemable. He deserved what he got. Had a punch bowl at the end. He was, you know, lifting tables, you know, and tried to make him have fun, though. Gave him eight raisins, put on some weightlifting gloves.
Yep.
Just made him thick air, you know, and it's just ridiculous, as absurd as I can make him, you know, and on the wrong side of the track, and you take one for the team and you go down.
Thank you guys so much for being here. It was an absolute pleasure. And honestly, you know, of all these podcasts I've done, I was actually really nervous to meet you guys, just because it just that first It's just all so ingrained. Again, it's just so ingrained in my DNA. And just to think, like, oh my God, I get to do something. I actually get to sit down and talk with these guys. It's just been a tremendous honor.
Nice. So, it's nice to have more than 4 minutes to cover it. So it was very it was easy, man. Thanks so
much. Well, thank you for being here, Billy and Ralph, and watch Karate Kid or Cobra Kai, which has. Yeah, watch both. Watch Karate Kid.
Watch all of them.
Watch all of them. Nice. All right, thanks, everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
Have a nice burrito. Who's having burritos?
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 65th National Finals of Distinguished Young Women.
Every year, one girl from every state leaves her family, her whole life behind, for 2 weeks, and spends each day training, practicing, preparing. Because to win this competition, she needs to wow a panel of judges with her academic record, her athletic ability, her speaking skills, and a show-stopping talent.
I met her and I was like, she's gonna win.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
When I sing that song about being a black woman in America, there's gonna be backlash about that.
Oh, I'm just so happy. So happy.
I don't want to see them. I don't want to talk to them.
And then we stayed with them for the next year, unpacking just what happened those 2 weeks in Mobile. I'm Shimolyai, and from Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.